shuffle.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill, kill, kill.
Kill shuffle.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to an extra spooky edition of Kill Shuffle.
Spooktacular savings.
Yeah, I'm Donald.
I'm Dylan.
And once again, we bring you four albums this time. Three new releases and one classic.
Yes.
There's no theme, unfortunately, to the new releases, but there is a spooky theme to our classic album.
I mean, they're spooky in many ways.
Well, yeah. I think there's spooky elements to all of them in one way or another.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Notes.
I mean, not like Theremin X-Files level of spooky, but yeah. So the albums we're covering this week are The Sin and the Sentence, which is the new album by Trivium, an EP by a young band called Honey Spider from the UK, which we'll talk about. And then we're going to take another look at The Used this time this week. It's their new album, The Canyon.
Yeah, three albums post.
Artwork that we discussed last week. Yep. And finally, our Halloween spectacular classic release is Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo.
Yes.
Which, at 1985, I think makes it the oldest album we'll discuss on the show. Yeah. But you wouldn't know it listening to it.
No.
Well, you'd know it was the 80s, but it could be. It sounds like it could have come out in 2017. Anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The way things are going.
Let's kick off. Unless there's anything, Dylan, that you want to discuss that happened during the week.
Oh, God, no.
Been to any gigs?
No, not yet. Mm. But a lot of gigs coming up.
Coming up.
A lot of January, a lot of December. Queens of Stone Age is the soonest one, I think.
I guess in just under a month, yeah.
A lot of cool gigs coming up.
Sweet. Yeah. All right, sounds good. Okay, without any further ado, let's talk about Trivium.
Yes.
We need to talk about Trivium.
Oh, is this going to be another kind of In Flames incident, or is it?
That's for me to know and for you to find out.
Yeah, because they're the two bands I know you are very much kind of passionate about.
Yeah. No, Biffy is the other one. Biffy, Trivium, and In Flames have been my three heartbreaks of the last couple of years. It's got to be. Yeah. It has to be said.
Yeah. So it's been a while since you truly liked Trivium.
Oh, yeah. Like for me, I mean, put it this way, right? It's gone from Ascendancy is, I don't know, it's my favorite album of all time.
That's fine.
It's my favorite album of all time.
It's fine that one single was on. What was the one single that was on Kerrang all the time?
I think that was probably Pull. No, not Pull Harder. Gunshot to the Head of Trepidation. The one that had the sweep pan around the drummer as he was doing the fucking huge fill at the start. That's Gunshot to the Head of Trepidation.
That's as far as my knowledge goes. And there's a few others. Early singles that go on.
So you're coming into this relatively fresh.
Yeah, and I know In Waves, of course.
Oh, well, yeah. The album or the song?
Bits of the album. I never dived into it.
Yeah. Okay, so well, for me, it's like Ember to Inferno, which is their first album, is, you know, it's a band playing really fast, really loud, and everything that they want to play. It's not very structured, but it's good. I like it. And then, as I say, Ascendancy was definitely one of, if not the album that got me into metal music, and I just think it's flawless from start to finish. It's unbelievable, which makes it arguably my favorite album of all time. Yeah. It's just a fantastic record. And then you've got Shogun, which I never gave enough time to, but as far as I know, it's brilliant. I just have never like gone back and really listened to it properly. And then you've got The Crusade, which came after. I forgot about it. That's how lackluster it is.
Wow.
It's terrible.
Okay.
I got it the day it came out, 2006, and it's rubbish. And then we go Shogun, and then you get I believe In Waves came after that, which is my second favorite. That's it's almost tied for first. In Waves is an unbelievably good album, like Ascendancy. And it's just, ever since then, it's been like a slide, like a kid's fun slide, just vertically downhill since then.
Yeah. But why?
Because, well, first and foremost, it was because Matt Heafy is a very malleable individual, it seems like, vocally speaking.
Yeah.
The producers and the artists that he works with when he's creating albums seems to really influence the way his voice sounds. So it's like, you know, he worked with David Draiman on, I think that was on the last one, on Silence in the Snow.
He's Disturbed's singer.
Yeah, Disturbed singer. Which we all know. Down on the sickness. Anyway,
good voice for himself.
Yeah, I think Matt Heavey's got a great voice, but when he's pushed in the wrong direction, he does this power metally sort of grizzly man standing on a mountain with a Thor's hammer that I don't really like. That was the vocal style, and the metal seemed very watered down. And kind of derivative, the last two albums.
Yeah.
On Vengeance Falls, in sort of a cheesy kind of like influenced by thrash, but it, with no modern aspects at all. And then on Silence in the Snow, with a very kind of hard rock influence that, again, I didn't think was great. So that's where we are at. I had no interest at all in the last two albums. I listened to them once and went, nope, not for me, and never went back to them. There we are. That's me with trivia.
Okay.
What did you think of The Sin and the Sentence?
I like Bits. Mm. I really liked Bits, which surprises me over anything else.
Really?
Yes, because I've never liked Trivium.
Oh, so it wasn't just, you weren't just like agnostic. You were like, you were avoiding them.
No, I don't like the singer. That's where I stand.
And Matt, it's like in Matt's voice, that's a thing. I think he toes that line, because there's three Matt Heafys. There's Matt Heafy letting the demon rip, which is what he does on most of Ascendancy and In Waves, which sounds great. There's Matt Heafy doing, like, you know, just straight down the line vocals for the chorus, which he does mostly on Ascendancy and In Waves again. And then there's Matt Heafy doing his power metal vocals.
Yes, and I believe the first song in this has all three.
It does, that's right, exactly. Instead of the title track.
Yeah, but it's not all over the place, thank Christ. It's kind of like, okay, here's...
Yeah.
There seems to be a lot of intention around it.
And I think that first track is where it's at its most egregious. I think they get it out of the way early, because that very first... His first line is there. Sounds like a bloody Pokemon theme or something.
A voice actor trying too hard to get a bassy kind.
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. It sounds like he's trying to play a character.
Which leave that to all the Bruce Dickinsons out there.
Yes, exactly.
It's Iron Maiden's jam, not Trivium's.
I think the rest of that song is strong enough that it overcomes. You know, that I can vibe with it still.
Tons of it, or a lot of it, is really good.
I
don't think I'll hit in the gripes yet, because there are gripes, but okay. positives. What one hell of an intro. Like, oh my god, the intro riff. Everything coming in, it's exactly how you come back to how you have a mission statement of, yes, we are back, and we know we've kind of floundered.
Right, and then I was actually just parsing through, like, all their albums on the way here, production-wise, and I think, you know, it's definitely the production job, to my ears, is too clean, but at the same time, at least you can hear everything, you know, it's really, really clear, which is great.
There is a bit of a bite.
No, it's got bite, but I think it's too, I think it sounds a little bit too squeaky clean, perfect, like, it doesn't have, I don't think there's enough of a grit to it, but at the same time, hearing that, hearing the guitars way up in the mix and whacking you around the face, I really appreciated that in the first, like, second of the song. I was like, that's great, they're back, you know?
I think a few songs in it are quite the opposite to that in a few ways, like, intentionally.
Like Every Night? Like the kind of, or Endless Night, the quote-unquote ballad?
Yeah, but there's also dirtiness to a lot of these songs, or bits of these songs.
Yeah.
Like, The Wretchedness Inside.
Yeah.
Has kind of, Devin Townsend kind of staccato, or legato staccato.
Yes,
like dun.
Jeweler. No, I know what you're saying. I think that's the one as well that has the kind of like hardcorey breakdown as well.
I like that side of Trivium, actually.
The Wretchedness Inside is one of the few moments where it kind of lost me a little bit.
Okay, because that's what I'd rather Trivium be for me, because I love it when they go heavier than. When they really surprise you, because there are surprises on this.
There are surprises.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people are constantly bemoaning the loss of Matt Heafy's heavy vocal. Like,
it's
here in spades. Because this happens again and again. I mean, it happened on Crusade, everyone was like, that's it, he's done, he's never screaming again. And then they came back with Shogun, which was more of a balance, and then In Waves.
Was it a choice not to, or was it just to...
It was a conscious choice.
Okay.
It's always been a conscious choice when he's done it, and it's been a conscious choice when he's brought it back. Mm-hmm. But it's great to hear it back, honest with you, because it was totally absent on Silence in the Snow. And it just adds more light and shade to the songs.
Yeah.
I just think it starts so well.
The first three tracks are pretty on the nail.
The first five tracks, actually, for me, are on the nail. I think some of the chorus vocals in this on this album are like among the strongest Trivium have ever done.
Some remind me of stuff Him have done.
Yeah.
A lot of their contemporaries, like the better side of what their contemporaries have done, like Bullet. A lot of Bullet's really good stuff, which is far and few between, but
No, but when it, but when they're good, they're good.
Yes, yeah.
And I think when Trivium have been at their best, see, that's the thing, is Trivium is this Frankenstein's monster of so many different elements of metal, and they pick and choose where they want.
Yeah, it's why I don't... it's why this is not complete, just some old bullshit for me, is because there's so much to take from it.
Yeah.
And you can leave what you don't like behind, but you still have...
Right.
A lot of different forms of metal in this. That's good.
Yeah, like, it's they're almost kind of the... When they're on form, they're almost like the perfect exemplar of what metal is in 2017.
Yeah, they're well and truly that. I would say I'm kind of tired of... I'm not sure if it's them doing it, they're the only ones doing it, but the neoclassical Inge G. Malmsteen solos. I could really do without them.
Are you talking about the, like...
And the one they clearly ripped, I can't remember what the song is, but I think
it's on The Sin of the Sentence, the first track, isn't it?
I know, but it is a song.
Already.
And it's in the solo of your single to your new album,
and it's already a
classical song. In the solo, it's kind of
I agree with you completely. That's the kind of shit that made me. And I'm sorry,
who are you kidding as well,
Kev or whoever. But you know, that's the kind of shit that made me when I went to Iron. You know, when I was at Iron Maiden, I didn't go to Iron Maiden, but I was at Iron Maiden when they played. I think it was Metal Town. It was Metal Town or Grass Pop, and I just went, man, I just find those, like, you know, nods to classical music in your solos just really, they put me off. They're a little bit cheesy, to be honest.
I
like some Iron Maiden, but that shit, it does my head in. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I'd say Iron Maiden is less so. They make it their own. This kind of really stood out like a sore thumb.
Because Trivium goes so hard. It's a characteristic of bands in that new wave of British heavy metal, where it's like, it's kind of fun heavy metal. It's like beach ball heavy metal. Whereas Trivium go harder than that. So when you hear those little, this is Bach and it rocks, it's a rock block of Bach, you kind of go, it doesn't quite work.
It ages it.
Yeah.
A fair bit.
Yeah.
Which is to say, this album's not a complete step back. It is a half step forward, I'd say, from their last point. Because I did listen to the last album and it was balls.
Balls, yeah. Smelly, ass balls. Hairy balls. Yeah, it's not good.
But this sounds very clearly, objectively, from like somebody who doesn't know anything about Trivium, bits of this sound great.
Yeah, I agree. I think what the great thing with this album is they do all the elements of Trivium well at least once on the album. Like, I think on From the Heart From Your Hate is Trivium doing their, you know, we are a stadium rock band when we want to be, and doing it really, really well. Mm-hmm. I think Betrayer is, we are a black metal band that can play really, really fast and doing it really, really well.
Almost.
And then, and Revanchist is where they go, like, okay, we can also be a prog metal band and doing it really well. So that's, I think they hit all the points. It's just the album is nearly an hour and there's almost one track per side in the Trivium prism that doesn't work, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think Thrown Into the Fire works all that well.
I agree.
I don't think... you like Wretchedness Inside, but I'm not so keen on that one.
Yeah, I think it's them being creative outside of the realm.
But apart from that, I mean, those are my only gripes.
And Sever the Hand is also pretty... I like Sever the Hand a lot as well. That's
a good one.
That was really cool.
Yeah, that's cool. I just think, honestly, I mean, if they cut out those tracks or change them slightly and added just a bit more dirt into the production job.
Yeah.
This would be, for me, like a complete return to form.
Almost. I'd say a lot of the verses are quite forgettable.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
That's probably true. For the most part, yes.
Yeah, I don't think that's the realm.
They live in choruses. Choruses and riffs.
Except
for
the Wretchedness Inside, which has the great kind of counterpointal, the offbeat hi-hat drums.
Yeah.
With kind of the Devin Townsend riff, and that's really cool.
That is good. Mm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there. Do you want a little fun fact?
Yes.
You know the Revanchist, the second to last track, I think, second or third to last track, the really long one.
Yes.
Do you want to know what revanchism is? I found this out on Wikipedia, but it's quite cool. So revanchism is the political manifestation of the will to reverse territorial losses incurred by a country, often following a war or social movement. As a term, revanchism originated in the 1870s France in the aftermath of the Franco-Prussian War among nationalists who wanted to avenge the French defeat and reclaim the lost territories of Alsace-Lorraine. So I don't know how that figures into the lyrics, but it's like,
I didn't notice that. I didn't pick up on that.
It's like, so if you like lost the war and someone took half your land, you're like, I want it back. Revanchism.
Yes.
So yeah, that's quite cool. Because I had no idea. I thought it could have been a Lord of the Rings term for all I knew before I looked it up.
Part of the Silmarillion, but no.
Yeah, but they like that. Trivium like, and they've only ever done it badly on the Crusade, where they just throw in all these mad terms and crazy lyrics, and it doesn't work. Other than that, they actually do it pretty well. And they've always gone for themes of, like, you know, what's the word, like, kind of sociological themes, I guess, like society rebelling, or
they're not a political band by any stretch, but
no, they're not, but
socio-political more so.
Yeah, but no, but they have an interest in, like, anthropology and stuff. Like, they always talk about society and often fighting the power and blah blah blah, blah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily talking about, like, America or any current country, but, like, they do talk about politics in that sense. that's the sin in the sentence by Trivium, I guess. I mean, it's at the end of the day, it's like a meat and potatoes metal album with what it like draws from. What I like is it draws from a lot of death metal. It has the Gothenburg sound. That's when they're at their best. That's on, like, Through Oblivion.
Yes,
that's on. That's a little bit of it on the sin in the sentence, but it's Beyond Oblivion, in Other Worlds, and then kind of Beauty and the Sorrow as well. That's where they live. When I listen to them, that's
okay.
Good Trivium.
Okay.
And then you've got, like, your kind of iffy power metal stuff, your much better black metal stuff, a little bit of death metal thrown in for fun, and
groove
whatever
metal,
you're
groove metal
as well, a little bit of tech, a little bit of djent.
Yep,
it's all in there.
It's fun. Much better than I thought it would be, which is amazing.
Trivium are back.
Like, I listen to it without speeding up through songs because points, I know what to expect. I mean, there was a bit of that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't egregious at all.
Yeah.
For the most part.
But no, when I pushed play on this album, I was like, oh no. Because I heard the single, and the Sin in the Sentence doesn't give enough of an overview of what they cover here for it to be like a reassurance. Because when I heard the Sin in the Sentence, went, oh no. Listened to the album first time and kind of went...
Second song seems careful.
No.
Yeah.
But the more I listened to it, the more I kind of came around. I was like, no, it's... You can kind of they've done a better job than they've ever done before of working together, the three Matt Heafys.
Yeah, one would imagine they'd be on a lot more form in the next album. I'd hope.
I'm really looking forward to the next album. But that being said, with Trivium, you never know, because they're as I said, they pinwheel between albums I don't care about one bit to my favorite album of all time. Yeah. That's the
Game
the
Changers
kind of
to a fault.
Here. Yes, but I remain cautiously optimistic for what they do next, and I will say that it sounds like their drummer troubles are probably over, because the drumming on this album is phenomenal.
It is.
And I remember seeing them on the In Waves tour at a festival back in like 2012, I guess. And the drummer could not play the songs. Like, the dude, I mean, it was a great gig, brilliant gig, great set list. It was all in Waves and Ascendancy, which is all I wanted to hear. But the drummer was fucking up in every single song. So, and they kicked out their original drummer right before that. So
It
sounds like they found somebody who can play the songs, play them well, and do creative drumming, which is cool. So great. So that's the Sin in the Sentence by Trivium. If you like Trivium, you're going to love this. And if you like rock music, you will probably like this.
Favorite song? Rankin?
Favorite song is probably The Heart From Your Hate.
Okay.
What about you?
Wretchedness Inside.
Yeah, boy. And do you want to give it a score out of 10?
Six. I think six.
Okay.
That seems right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Six coming in blind to Trivium. This is their fourth best album. Like, you know what I mean? Six is a perfectly reasonable score for a fourth best album. This is going to get an 8 from me. I'm going to come back to this again and again, and I know I will.
Okay.
The songs have already started to burrow themselves into my brain, which doesn't happen often, so it's an 8. Okay, cool. That's what Dylan's like.
No,
reticent here.
Yeah. Well, I'd never come back to the album, I'll tell you that.
I will definitely come back to this, but I love Trivium, so
it's okay.
I'm a very fickle fairweather friend, but I love Trivium. Okay, let's move on. So the next album is actually a tip-off from a music friend I know called Johnny Reed. Lovely man, and he's got an incredible taste in music. So when I want to find out what's going on, finger on the pulse, I ask Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought me these guys, Honey Spider, who are from Lancashire and Yorkshire. And they've just released their first EP, In a Haze. Dylan, what does it sound like?
I think we've reviewed stuff like this, right?
We certainly have.
Quite a lot of bands like this.
Dylan's like, this fucking guy. All he wants to listen to is music like this. And it's true. It's all I want to listen to.
Yeah. It's no. I don't know. I'm trying to gather my thoughts. What do you think?
Okay, well,
what makes this interesting for you?
What makes this interesting for me is it's another band that just strikes a great balance between reverby, fuzzed up, dreamy, shoegazy, emoed out guitars.
Mm-hmm.
A really cool sort of, how would you describe, like a smooth vocal. You know, a guy with a really lovely sonorous voice that's reverbed to fuck, and a band that know what they're doing. It's just evokes a feeling for me the same way that 100th do.
Yeah.
The same way that Jaws do.
I thought this was Jaws. Sorry.
No. Jaws don't.
I thought there was some connection.
No.
In the vocals, especially.
He does sound like the guy from Jaws, but no. This is its own thing because it's the guitars are heavier than
they're
Jaws.
They're heavier. That's what kept me listening.
This lives in rock. I think Jaws lives in indie.
Yeah.
You know. Yes. And 100th are a different thing altogether. And this also has elements of like what Basement do,
mm-hmm.
and in the vocal also, and what Citizen do.
Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, it's not fully formed at this point, Honey Spider, you know, that we can draw such clear comparisons to bands like 100th and Jaws and whatever.
Mm.
But it still excites me what they're doing.
Okay.
Because I think there's enough in those songs and there's enough variety as well. Between
almost
on a four, is it a four track or a five track?
It's five track, I believe.
Five track, yeah,
I think so.
Every song has a different vibe.
Or four, it's four. Sorry,
four.
Sorry.
And I can call, you know, and you can immediately call them all to mind. At least I can,
mm-hmm.
because they have, rather than getting lost in these dreamy soundscapes, which is something that, you know, it's a pitfall you can fall into when you do this kind of music. Bliss is another one actually that we reviewed recently that,
yeah.
you know, have this kind of sound, but you can kind of fall into that ethereal
mm-hmm.
waves of distortion and vocal. But what these guys do well is they actually have buzzy riffs that break up the, not the monotony, but that kind of punctuate the more dreamy sections, which I really like.
Yeah, it's a lot clearer. I still think it's buried. Still think everything's buried in with each other.
I think that might be possibly a comment on the production more than anything else, though, because I think this very much sounds like a first EP, production-wise.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Like, unfortunately, it's great that we can give bands, like smaller bands, a platform or whatever, but mm-hmm. at the end of the day, like, it could not stand toe-to-toe with the kind of production that you would see in a Jaws or in a 100th or whoever. Yeah, it's quite hissy.
Yeah.
It's quite tinny. But that's, you know, but that, like, every band has to go through that stage. And I think the songs are there, which is the main thing.
Yeah. The vocalist he's just kind of there. Nothing much picks it up over everything else.
True.
Yes.
Is that a feature or a bug, though? Because I think it's a feature.
It does no harm.
I think
it doesn't spike my interest.
That's fair.
And that's possibly worse. I mean, it's not like judging crappy movies. Between just off genuine instead of just genuinely awful films,
right?
I'm not trying to make that comparison. I'm just saying it doesn't.
No,
spike.
I know what you're saying. I think it's quite a unique skill to be able to blend, to be able to blend a voice in so well with the music. Like I often think you can find bands that are mismatched with their vocalist, and I don't think that's happened here. I think the vocal and the music are perfectly matched.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing of the day to follow. With this kind of music, I think, is that kind of vocal.
Mm.
I guess that's just the scene.
Mm.
And I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean,
besides bands like Bliss.
Yeah, it is funny though, isn't it? Like, just as an aside, but it is kind of funny that the people that like to write this kind of music just usually tend to have that kind of voice. But then if you think about it, the kind of person that likes to write pop punk seems to always have a kind of nasally, snotty, bratty kind of voice. Like, it's just funny, you know.
Yeah,
they very rarely get mismatched.
The newfound gloryisms and all that.
Yeah. Or the Propagandies, which is an album we couldn't get around to this week. But
yeah, but like, I don't know. Like, Bliss were the first to break the mold.
But yeah,
in this respect.
Yeah.
And I wish I got this out of that out of this.
Yeah, well, give them time.
Maybe
this is you know, it's a first EP. And maybe it's just a case of they're wearing their influences on their sleeve right now.
Yeah, there is some nice riffage. Like, there absolutely is.
Yeah. Especially in Cogs, I think that's got some really nice stuff. And it's heavier than most of those other bands.
Yeah. But I believe there needs to be a lot more room for mixing it up sonically.
Yeah.
Throughout it. Because if you're going to have an EP sounding all the same production wise, sound wise,
yeah,
reverb wise, EQ wise, put bits in there, put little crumbs of different genres in there at some point.
Yeah.
To spark up things. Different styles of a guitar. I don't think there's a lot of that in this.
I think in that cogs, that do do da do 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 da, like, yeah, I think that, you do get that, yeah. It's a buzzier,
yeah,
front and center guitar. But I agree with you. For the most part, it is, you know, you're you're talking about, like, it's chords.
Yeah. It does no harm. Listen to it. You'll enjoy it probably still.
Yeah. Like, I feel like this is the reverse of what happened with Azami.
No. Azami's a total different kettle of fish. That'll a lot of things.
I'm not talking about musically. But I'm just saying that, like, Azami was like catnip for Dylan, and this is like catnip for Donal. So,
yeah,
you know, it's the sort of the reaction that we had. Like,
how much have you listened to this?
A lot. Yeah, like probably like 5 or 6 times.
Okay, I listened to Azami probably about 20 to 30 times before I brought it onto the podcast.
So, until it's like, where's your fucking commitment?
So,
I know.
I want to see how you are about this 30 listens down the line. You know,
it's gonna happen.
Yeah, I wonder what EPs. Like, very few EPs have given me that. I'd say the only EPs to do that were the Sleep Token ones.
Yeah.
And probably a bit of what Milk Teeth do.
Right, well, yeah.
There's a lot of replay value for that.
There is, yeah. The only EP that I ever dug into...
Oh, and Nine Inch Nails, but whatever.
Oh, well. No, it's fair, totally fair, absolutely. Yeah. What was the EP that I... Oh, man, it was like right there in my head and I just forgot it. That I got like so much listening out of. Oh, yeah, Rat Race EP by Enda Shikari.
Yeah.
It was just like 3 tracks, but they were all... basically 10 out of 10 tracks, just again and again and again and again. But that's the thing about an EP, it's diminishing returns, because you do need an album, I think, an album length,
yes,
to really succumb to the endless replayability. So I'm looking forward to their album, and we will cover it if it comes out.
Sure.
Yeah, all right, okay, let's move on, because it's only a short one. But
yeah,
that's In a Haze by Honey Spider, and you can find it on Bandcamp, you can find it on Spotify, wherever you are looking for your music. Do you want to give a favorite track, Dylan?
Slumber's pretty good.
Slumber's
actually
good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll take Cogs. And a score out of 10?
5.
Ooh.
Not awful yet. Well, not insulting.
I'm going to bolster it with an 8.
Oh, God.
Heck,
there's a lot of really good albums that you haven't given an 8.
That's
like,
true.
Like, that you really like as well.
Mm.
Oh, my.
I really like this.
Mm.
That's just like your opinion, man.
It is.
All right, cool. That's Honey Spider. Let's move on.
It is.
So the next album we're going to talk about is by The Used.
The
Used,
yes. The never ending in their... They have a lot of albums. Jeez.
Yeah.
9 albums, I think. This is the 9th one.
So these boys, if you didn't listen last week, come from Utah. And we discussed their 2009 album Artwork last week. And
this is four albums down the line. So this is
yeah. And I happen to really like that album.
Yeah, it's a grower.
Yeah, for not a shower. Fans.
This has bits of that, right? And it's collected a lot down the line. You probably listen to the albums, and you definitely know that they've collected bits down the line.
Do you hear? Artwork. Maybe let's start there.
In bits.
Do you hear bits of artwork in this?
Bits, yeah. The second single, I believe, what's it called? It is called Rise Up Lights.
Oh, okay.
That has a bit of... The harder edge stuff has that in this.
Yeah. Because just right off the bat, what I feel like about this album is that Bert and the boys were listening to a lot of At the Drive-In, the Mars Volta,
possibly
Coed and Cambria,
possibly,
and Let Live, because those are the 4 key influences that I hear. Just
that sounds like good listening to, like, me, my friend.
Yeah, no, not at all. No, I'm just...
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just from an observational point of view, I hear those touchstones throughout the album, and I didn't hear them at all on Artwork.
Yeah, this seems like a new. Another milestone.
Right.
This is probably my favorite one since then.
Okay. All right.
Like, there's not a lot of filler in this album. For a 17-track album, I'm curious to what you think about the potential fillerisms in this.
Yeah.
But I think as long as this album is, it seems very, very carefully planned out.
Mm.
Like let's say, I don't know, like the Smashing Pumpkins did with Melancholy.
With Melancholy.
They put out real fast, but they
mm.
had a surplus of great songs.
Yeah, so this is like...
And that's the worrying bit about this, about releasing an album like this.
Mm.
Without stating it being a two-disc album or a double-disc
yeah.
kind of thing.
Because it's an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, because no matter how good the songs are, it can test your patience. This is a very captivating album
mm.
when it really gets into it. I'd say about three, four songs in,
yeah.
I at least started to get it.
Yeah, like I started to get it on... I started to get it on Vertigo Cave. That was the first sort of time when I went, when I felt like I could hear elements of the Use. And I know that's a bit rich coming from me, but you know what I mean? Up until that point, I felt like I was constantly searching for influences and touchstones and like sound alikes and blah, blah, blah. But yeah. on Vertigo Cave was the first okay. point where I went, okay, here we go. This is something new, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bits of that. I mean, they've never started an album with a quiet tribute like that.
Mm.
I know you weren't too keen on it.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to it like four or five times since then. I rescind my worst song of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still think it's... Listen, you have to preface this by yeah, saying yeah. that Ross Robinson is a certain type of producer, okay?
Yeah.
And he's the type of producer that goes in and essentially what he does is he tries to psychologically break down his artists to the point where they're a puddle of
yeah.
of and he did, personal
he did,
issues.
He did this.
Ross Robinson did this, right?
The prefix that,
mm.
Burt McCracken, has a load of emotional turmoil.
Yes.
That is the span of the Used's history as being
yes. yeah, yeah, yeah.
him being very no bullshit with his heavy heart.
Yes.
So
when you combine Burt McCracken, who as we know is into emotional bloodletting on his albums,
yeah.
and Ross Robinson, who broke Korn and Slipknot and did, you know, and did Sepultura, broke Sepultura yeah. also. He basically bullies his artists into having yeah. mental breakdowns and then puts them in front of a microphone.
Mm.
So you combine those two things, and for me, I find, even though I love when people put personal emotion into yeah. songs and personal emotion into lyrics and stuff like that, for me, the first track just steps beyond that line of me being able to like engage with it. Mm. On a like objective level, it's too much for me. It's like it just feels like I'm.
Well, it's like
going into somebody's house when you never met them. Oh, like, hey, it's too much.
Yeah. I'd probably say diehard fans would be like, yes,
maybe.
I feel you.
Yeah,
and it's hard, and objectively, it's very hard to feel that from any other perspective because it's pretty heavy.
It's super heavy. Put it this way, Dylan. I wasn't comfortable listening to Jonathan Davis cry for 10 minutes at the end of the first Korn album.
Yeah,
like it's for me when the artist is like actually sobbing in the vocal booth. I'm like, that's too far.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That's just what he does.
It's an album. You can listen to the rest. Like that's how.
Oh, fully. Yeah, yeah.
That's the best part about albums. Like,
yeah,
this.
And it's gotten to the point where like I can just absorb it as part of the greater whole of the album. And it kind of ramps up slowly. That's kind of what it does.
I appreciated it more after the full 17
right.
went. And it went back to that. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Because I think...
It all stacks.
The core message at the heart of this album. There's forays into politics and there's forays into other stuff. But it seems to be mostly about Burt McCracken's friend who presumably shot himself.
Mm-hmm.
Or
this time last year.
Right. Okay.
So recording that song.
Mm.
So we... I'd almost assume it was even closer to that time. They probably did this in the summer,
right?
So yeah, fresh wounds all over this.
Yeah, so that, I mean, so that like that informs a lot of the writing, like especially yeah. on it's on what's the song where he's like, I saw your bass guitar on the wall and blah 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 blah.
Oh,
all that stuff. Is that I think that might be Upper Falls.
It's a little later on, yeah.
Or even maybe it's like later on. And there's another one, Song About You, which is great,
mm-hmm.
really really good. Second to last song,
mm-hmm.
Which is also about this yeah. dude. I think he does a lot of great tributes and some really sort of delicate lyrics on this, which is really cool.
Yeah, it seems this is as heavy as the album we last covered artwork, but in a totally different way. Because the guitars are more somber and bluesy.
Yeah.
What would you compare it to?
Like musically,
guitar wise. Like there's bits of like Fleetwood Mac and stuff like that in there.
There's even bits of the Specials.
Yeah,
like there's that kind of one weird like reggae ska kind of break in the Divine Absence, which yeah. I was like, whoa, okay. And yeah, like guitar wise, I do think that the central like guitar tone of the album does remind me a lot of the new At the Drive-In album.
Yeah,
or the Mars, or like a sort of Delouse in the Comatorium area era.
Yeah, but this is Mars Volta. I think this nails what they're trying to do a lot better, because they don't dwell on those effects too long.
No, they don't.
Like these guys are very, very, very adept at like making a creative song, you know.
Yeah, they can at least work in like a good chorus in a way that those other bands sometimes like leave to the wayside.
I don't think I've ever seen. Actually, no, I don't think I've ever seen a band 9 albums down the line come up with an album like this.
Oh yeah,
there's not many.
Soilwork did it with their double album. Where they like,
but they changed their style halfway through, right?
Kind of like they basically their style was has been constantly evolving.
That's why I'm not like putting Darren Gray in this, because they changed from Visual Kai to modern rock a lot later down the line, but these guys consistently have been stepping over potholes.
Yeah. I mean, do you think there's any missteps on it? Like, I mean, for me, I think that the rap section on The Quiet War is a bit out of nowhere and slightly random.
It's not long-lived.
No, it's very short.
And the part
it's
after it is really good.
No, I like The Quiet War as a song. I just think it's kind of strange when he starts rapping for like 10 seconds.
He does some weird stuff like
that. Yeah.
He has done some scat rapping as well. Very quick fire stuff. It works. Yeah. I don't know where to start with this album. It's 17 songs, so
there's another song actually. I think it might be the Nexus that the uses Nexus. The same chord progression as "Kissing You Goodbye" from Artwork. Where I was a bit, I just kept found myself like drifting off into like a reverie of singing that song. But you know, I do think it's too long. I'm sorry to say that. I mean, I know that's their creative vision and they wanted to make it long. And I think it should be long.
Yeah,
but I think an hour would have been appropriate. I think an hour and 20 minutes is slightly pushing it.
That's not a criticism on the songs.
No,
wait, that's
it is and it isn't, because I do think that there are certain
songs it doesn't do damage to the songs, the length of the album.
No,
except for fatigue of potential fatigue of listening to songs.
No, but I just think that there are certain songs that aren't up to the same standard as the rest. Like that's you know, for me, I don't think Selfies in Aleppo is up to the standard of the rest. I think that Selfies in Aleppo and Moving the Mountain
Selfies in Aleppo, the chorus was a bit odd. I like I like a lot of the verses, even for the choruses I don't quite like.
I like the quote at the start. It's George Orwell.
Yes.
Yeah. From Homage to Catalonia, which is cool. I like that part.
It's very cool. Yeah. A lot of nice bits in this.
Yeah, there's like a clip from a movie at one point as well, which is cool.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which part it is, but I think there's the songs that you could lose are sort of towards the middle and the end for me.
Because the middle picks it up.
But certain songs on it, I
Vertigo Cave, Pretty Picture, that's Funeral great. Post.
Good.
Upper Falls.
Great.
The Divine Absence is when they start getting real weird, kind of Fleetwood Mac-y with their guitar verses. And
I'd keep that one.
Yeah.
Selfies in Aleppo, I would personally possibly...
I'll have to go back to it.
Make a B-side. Moving the Mountain, possibly a B-side. Over and Over Again, best song on the album, still. Lead single. For me, best song on the album.
Possibly.
Yeah.
A lot of cool stuff is in this album. A lot of cool stuff to pick from, even from bits of the songs you may not like. Still have a lot to offer. In terms of like weird sonics.
And
odd oddities you'd hear from and So I Watch It From Afar albums.
Yeah,
in terms of guitar work, and
there's even on About You, the second to last track, there's even a very like family era Cast of Cheers sound to the guitar.
Yeah,
you know, that kind of, it's like a repeating shimmering up high on the fretboard.
That's kind of new for the Used. Some of the later stuff is really good. Like the Nexus has a huge kind of bombast to it.
Yeah.
That it hasn't been heard in used albums in a while, I don't think. Sorry, I'm just checking out the tracks now.
Yeah, of course.
Moondream was a bit of a floater for me. Not a bad song, just kind of lingering.
I'll be honest, I can't call it to mind right now.
It doesn't have any guitar in it. It's just it doesn't have any heavy guitar. It's just the violins.
That's right. Yeah, I could probably...
It seems like a nice break, I guess, before the last three songs.
Because I think having the last track, whatever it's called, the Mouth of the Canyon.
Which ends...
Yeah.
With almost like... Do you know that Block Party song, Get Ratchet, or Ratchet? I think it's Ratchet. Yeah. It has the doom, 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 doom. That kind of ends the Mouth of the Canyon... kind of riff, and I was like, oh my god.
No, do you know what it reminds me? It's funny that you should say that, because it reminds me of Pendulum.
Okay.
I think it's Midnight, or some Midnight Run or something by Pendulum, which has like...
I'm sure in no way they stole it, but it's fairly similar in kind of that progression.
Yeah, I know the progression you're talking about. It's funny, it reminds me of Pendulum, but it's definitely in that zone of like... You know, it's an ascending scale, essentially, so it's probably been done before, but it works.
This is a very special album for Used, I think, in their career.
It's brave.
Yeah, it's brave. It's, for the most part, totally not what they've ever done before, even on, like, artwork.
Yeah.
And that was the first time they forayed away from their typical sound. That was almost 8 years ago.
And this is only the second time, with artwork being the other exception, that they've worked with an outside producer. Like, they have their go-to producer that they worked with on every album but these two.
Yeah, and it's definitely like one of the saddest albums they've done, I think, but most somber at points. Like very, very sad happy in an adult way.
Yeah, at times.
A lot of it seems less angsty. And more kind of like some of the tracks that have the Fleetwood Mackie guitars,
right,
are very bluesy, and it feels like they've learned a lot,
from other
bands. I don't know. It's
yeah. It's definitely more considered or something. How do you feel on the production wise? I know. Like, we talked about his approach, but like the actual sound, it was all recorded to tape.
Yeah, yeah. I like it. It's a lot less wall of sound from artwork, and that's fine. I'm fine with that, even though I love that wall of guitar in artwork, and most of their albums, like In Love and Death, their main staple album, the second one,
right,
that has like unfathomable guitar work, like production, and I don't think they've had an album since that's been that huge, as well as artwork.
Sure.
They've just been changed. It's just I've got nothing against changing up different recording techniques. Like, it doesn't always need to be wall of sound.
No, I hear you. I think...
For the sound they call for.
Yeah. I think where this album needed it, I think it really could have done with more. Like, if you understand... Like, I think the level that they've gotten, the sort of average...
Yeah.
Is good. Is really, really good.
Yeah.
And they took the right approach. But I think for those moments where it's supposed to swell to a massive climax, I think the flatness of recording it to tape... It you can't make up the difference enough.
It really all depends then what you listen to it on with.
Well, that's true as well.
Because
that's
it
true.
Changed up quite a bit for what I was doing. I think in-ear headphones work incredibly with it. If you've got any good docking stations,
cans not so well, but good speakers.
Yeah, that speaker is perfect for it.
It's almost, well, I suppose if that was the standard when it was when very few people did listen to music with headphones. It's much more of a sit down at a record player with a set of speakers.
It totally has a classical mindset to it, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you mention, this is sort of a tangent, but did you mention The Year of the Black Rainbow to me when you were asking? Yeah, because Broken Windows, the third track, second track?
Yeah.
Very Year of the Black Rainbow.
Yeah, I like that. Not many bands deal with that kind of
emotional sound. Yeah, like emotional arena rock with a sort of prog heart, I guess, is sort of, that's how you describe it.
Yeah,
in Cambrian, it's not that track very much.
I mean, I live in my own bubble where, like, over and over again, should be number one on the radio.
Oh, Over and Over Again is great.
On like V Chart Radio. There you go. There's number one. But
and even my girlfriend, I'm not sure if I'd ever played it in the car or anything like that. But, you know, Over and Over Again came on. She was like, I think I know this. And I was like, whether or not that was true, it has that feel of a song that you already know. Which is
cool. And we're not saying it sounds like bits of a song we're working on, but bits of it do.
Although it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But different. It's different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, I mean, so there's a lot to dig into. It's almost...
It's a lot. It's hard to get through it.
It's hard to tackle.
I need more listens. I absolutely need more listens from one of my favorite bands' albums that came out 2 days ago.
Right.
This is like a Suey Fall over again.
Yeah. And that's been on repeat as well.
Yeah.
In my car. Just the Suey Fall album is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. But this is a special band, I think. They've outlasted their peers, like MCR, gone. Most other emo bands suck.
Yeah, Panic at the Disco took a totally different direction.
Yes, these guys are getting better and better, I think, with their songwriting. Maybe not their production.
This is their science fiction. It's just I don't like it as much as I like science fiction. But that's just me.
Yeah.
You know? But I still think it's an admirable... I still think it's a really good effort. I admire them for taking the chance. Certainly. And I think there's moments of this album that are winners. But I also think there's moments of this album that are slightly derivative or, for me, like, overshare.
Yeah.
You know? That's me.
Yeah, I don't think the derivative bits hurt because there's so much to go along
maybe
with.
Maybe I just need to listen to them more and more and more to the point where, like, I can hear the nuances and the slight variations.
And, you know, being derivative is not that bad.
No, it's not bad. It's like, not bad. Like,
Trivium is 99% derivative.
But I don't think Trivium sound like any other particular band.
Bullet from a Valentine. But if change the vocalists and there you go. We'll argue in some way. Because I liked Bullet.
Bullet are fine. I like some of their songs. Anyway, that's besides the point. What was your favorite track on this album?
It changes every time. Yeah. And that's a good sign for an album.
That is a good sign.
That I'm going to be listening to for
a
very long while.
Absolutely. But you got to give me one. What's your favorite song today? But,
yeah. So many songs change different styles.
Yeah.
Emotions and speeds. It covers all of the used soundscape, I think, this album. Whether that is to fault or for not.
Okay.
Or for progression, I guess. It's a 17-track album. What can I say? I think, this is a hard one. Upper Falls is really good.
Cool.
Like, I'm not going to go for the single.
Yeah, good choice. Upper Falls is good.
Upper Falls. The Nexus has some really good stuff.
Yeah. I will, sorry, I hate to be predictable, but it's got to be Over and Over again for me.
What's the second track?
Probably Vertigo Cave.
Yeah, that's good.
Third track, probably About You.
Yeah, like, it's all good. I'll change my mind tomorrow.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I may pick and choose this from this one, but I will listen to it through a couple times more.
Yeah.
Okay.
Will I rank it first?
Map me up. Moment of truth, Dylan. Out of 10 for the Canyon by the Used.
It's a 10.
It's a 10.
Yeah.
All right. And it's a 7 for me.
Okay. That's fine. It's fine. What did you give the artwork?
We don't normally rank the classic albums, but I would probably give it an 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm more proud of the Used taking this step.
Mm-hmm.
I think such as you might need context.
Maybe.
All the way through the discography to really appreciate this album. And that may sound a bit pompous, but it's like, for me, it's like, oh my God, they got this far to release a 17-track album. This good.
No, I hear you. It's, I mean, I can only rate it with my own sort of sense of perspective, and
it makes me speechless, so so figure that with, like, I don't know, the next Tool release or Perfect Circle release.
Yeah,
you might see us again.
Well, I'll be much more well read on Tool and the Perfect Circle when those albums come around, but I definitely enjoy this. I think there's some really great moments on it. It's just, for me, like, the gestalt of it doesn't quite fit together, but that's at the same time, I totally see where you're coming from with your 10. go for it. If you like the, if you've ever liked the Used, listen to this. And
even if you don't,
yeah. And I think, and well, if you've any interest in those other Touchstone bands that we mentioned, definitely give it a try.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's The Canyon by the Used.
It is.
And that brings us to our spooky, spoopy Halloween special.
Two spoopy, five Elfman.
Yeah. Okay, let's start there. So this is Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo. Yeah. Not an easy album to find, mind you.
Yeah, their fifth album.
Fourth
or fifth album, I think.
Right, yeah. It's like slap bang in the middle of their discography. So they started in the late 70s.
Yes, previously known as a... kind of a artsy stage act called the Mystic Nights of the Oingo Boingo.
Of the Oingo Boingo, yeah. So like this was a theatrical cabaret act run by Richard Elfman before he went off to become a filmmaker and bequeathed the
That's his brother,
the Mystic Nights, to Danny Elfman.
Yeah, and he left, I believe.
Yeah. So this, we're talking like mid-70s at this point.
There's some pretty cool documentaries about all that stuff.
Yeah. So Oingo Boingo, I had no idea about this. Is Danny Elfman's band.
Yes.
Danny Elfman,
I knew my entire life, so
you knew, you always knew. Yeah. But he of the Simpsons theme, he of the Tim Burton films, of Spider-Man, Hulk, whatever. Like new names.
The list goes on.
The list goes on and on and
He's still doing stuff.
Yeah.
He did the Oz. He most recently did the Oz or Oz.
Oh, Oz.
You know, the new Oz that came out in 2014. Yeah. He did that. I think he's still going.
He's a fantastic composer.
Yes.
So so when I first put this, when I finally found it, it's on Google Play Music. Which
did you expect this?
No.
Like when I said 80s, were you hand on the trigger, on the play button, going like...
I don't know what it was going to be.
What am I going to expect? Well, if I hear Danny Elfman in a band in the 80s.
I didn't know he was going to be the vocalist.
Yeah.
So, well, no, you know what I expected? Yeah. A crusty punk band. That's what I expected. Mm. I don't know why, but I just expected it to be like... But no, it wasn't at all. It's like... It's 80s.
They're genres.
Yeah.
It's not one genre, I will say. No. You got your new wave. You got bits of ska. Bits of punk rock.
Yeah, a little bit.
Weird. It has an air of his composition to it. It does. Especially in his vocals. Because I can imagine his vocal personality on something he'd compose for the string section in his own compositions.
I mean...
Or voices to people.
Yeah. It's kind of like... never have my expectations been blown out of the water more than hitting play on this album, because it starts with Just Another Day, which is one of the best songs I've heard all year.
Yeah.
Like, it's so unbelievable. What's
the first episode of Stranger Things, and it's the third song you'll hear.
Right.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was a surprise for me to go back to that again.
And so I suppose I didn't know what to expect, but what I heard the first time out was like... In his voice, I hear a little bit of Bono. I hear a little bit of David Byrne.
Yes.
I hear a little bit of Huey Lewis as well.
Huey Lewis and David Byrne. That's totally the mix.
And production wise as well, Huey Lewis isn't as musically dense as this, but it's the same, it lives in the same area, right?
Yeah, and a bit of David Sylvian as well.
Right.
He was in the band Japan, if you remember them.
Yeah,
A View to a Kill.
It's
stuff like that.
It's kind of got that like early. It's got that sort of early synthetic sound, but it's with so many organic elements blended in that it doesn't sound as jarring as it normally does when you listen back to one of those bands.
Glockenspiel playing under the whole song, I believe.
That's marimba.
Is it?
Yeah, but it sounds like it could be electronic.
Yes.
But nonetheless, it's
the looping over the entire song.
Yeah, it's the heartbeat of the song.
I love the way they play with that.
Yeah.
Because later on at the end of the song, acoustic guitar plays over it. And it's a long song.
It's long. They're all long songs, for the most part.
Yeah.
Nine tracks. This album is nine long tracks. But they make it work. And I think, like, is this ska?
No.
Cool.
Not entirely.
Because I have...
There's elements. You have some hankerings about ska.
Well, up to this point, I had pretty much a no exceptions rule when it came to ska.
Yeah,
I hate it all.
Yeah, well, you're more against modern ska, I'd imagine.
Put it this way, right? Yeah. This is the first album that I've seen described as ska anywhere. On Wikipedia, it's described as like new wave ska and like something else, like alternative rock.
He's influenced by ska. Right. He's influenced by Madness. stuff like that.
And I have Madness down here as well. I mean, you can...
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it has... It's weird, like, because it is wacky and it's obviously Halloween-y. I mean, the album's called Dead Man's Party. It's got the Mexican Day of the Dead on the front. And the lyrics are, for the most part, dealing with, like, specters and ghouls and skeletons and blah, 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 blah.
Like,
but
this is occasionally a 9-piece, 10-piece band live. They have great... They've had great gigs, from what I've heard. Every Halloween... They used to play the most rocking Halloween gigs on the planet.
But why then does this sound less zany than Madness does? You know what I mean? Like, to me, I can't hack the zaniness of Madness, but this to me sounds unbelievably cool. Yes. Like, it's like a cool spookiness.
Yeah. I think that's because there's so many people working their hand on it as well in the band, like
and the arrangements are never lazy.
Yeah, the Mystical Knights used to be, I think each of them used to pretty much play three different instruments throughout songs and stuff like that. So
yeah,
they put it all in this to make it work like a band.
Yeah,
with more of a poppy edge.
Oh yeah,
than an artistically zany edge, because they were a bit more ska beforehand.
Right, yeah.
In some of the EPs and stuff?
It doesn't quite have... I suppose maybe it's like that sweet spot where it's... There's enough like 80s rock and new wave in there to like stop it from totally collapsing into that... like normally of ska. But the bits that are in there, the playing on the horns and the saxophone and stuff like that is so cool.
The country blues, the partial heavy metal.
A little bit. There's a little bit of like...
No One Wants to Live Forever. Mm. Kind of the guitar riff.
Right. Yeah, no, it's really, really cool. And then actually, you've got like, I had to look this up to see whether or not it came out before or after Blue Monday. It's a couple of years after, but Same Man I Was Before has a real Blue Monday vibe to it.
Yeah.
It's like a big band swinging version of Blue Monday.
Especially the chorus.
Yeah, it's cool. It's really, really cool. It also, in general, reminded me of, did you ever like one of those Yamaha keyboards when you were a kid?
Yeah,
and you could just hit play and the demo song would play.
Yeah,
a lot of it just reminds me of the demo song from the Yamaha keyboard. This is what
they're trying to rip off.
Yeah, right. Yamaha was influenced by Ungo Bungo.
This is such a fun album. Absolutely fun album. Yeah. It's there at the zenith, I think.
Oh, is it? Yeah. Is this the Ungo Bungo record?
It's debatable. Okay, but yeah, it has Weird Science on it.
Yeah, and it's weird actually, because I mean, obviously, weird science. Danny Elfman doesn't like Weird Science. Now, if you like talk about it, if he talks in interviews, he'll say, "I wish I'd never written that song. It was for a John Hughes movie." He's like, "I feel like it's defined us because it's their hit." But
from what I've heard, he doesn't mind it too much. But it wasn't
okay.
It's not what the band's about.
But listening to it, it has a super similar sound to the rest of the album. Like, I was expecting...
That's why they put it on there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't tell you what they're all about.
That's fair.
The rest of the album does.
That's fair.
And the rest of it sounds more genuine.
Yeah, maybe that's true.
Even though that may have the sound, you know, it is written for something.
It's written for a soundtrack.
The vocal.
Yeah, it's a little bit... It's less personal. Like, the lyrics are more obviously just like a jokey metaphor.
Yeah. Pots and pans and test tubes and stuff like that.
Yeah. Bits and pieces. But it's all good, actually. It's all good. Even stay kind of at first I was a bit like, it's like kind of the cheesy ballad. But actually, there's enough musically interesting stuff
really
in there.
Cool. And it has kind of a Nightmare Before Christmas chorus to it.
Mm.
Kind of a group chant to it.
Yeah.
He overlays his vocals really nicely at that part.
Yeah.
No, I think... the guitarist or the bassist or one of the other people
just chimes in right
very nicely.
Who's doing vocals on is it Danny Elfman again doing vocals on the on Help Me, or is it somebody else?
I think the other guy, I can't remember his name, but he takes over for bits of it.
Okay, because whoever's singing, it's so Morrissey. It sounds it's like the Smiths for the first kind of 40 seconds or whatever, but really cool, you know.
But it's him for the most part.
Yeah. And like, he does such a... It was so weird. It'd be like finding out that Hans Zimmer was in a grindcore band or something. I just, yeah. I never expected, when I see the name Danny Elfman, I never expected to know what his voice sounded like, but now I totally do. And he's got some really cool little inflections that he does.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite vocalists of all time.
He's great.
And that's saying something.
That bit where he goes falsetto in and Just Another Day.
Yeah. Hey. Oh, God, it's so good. And really it's cool. Kind of a bluesy country slur to it, even though it's huge in the 80s.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah. And he can do that kind of, like, I'm being wacky and putting on a sort of creepy, crypt voice. But then, you know, but it's just for a couple of seconds, then he's right back to just sort of singing straight down the line.
He's another insane ginger front man. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see him. I wish I could have seen him in spandex all oiled up singing these songs.
Just watch, like, some of the videos from that those days. Like, I think Weird Science.
Or Dead Man's Party.
Dead Man's Party, that video.
Great song.
That video is totally them doing like NSYNC guitar kind of things.
Oh,
it's not the best video on their part as well, but
yeah,
they've admitted it's not the best video. But
yeah, but it's so nice to hear because this is such a rare proposition. It's like serious. I mean, it's fun. It's fun, playful music that clearly was written with a serious knowledge of how music works.
Yeah, really.
And it's like zany, or it's like wacky and zany, but without tipping over into self-parody. It's just cool.
Not being too much of a pop album as well.
Yeah,
it takes the risks. Like Dead Man's Party is totally like too long for radio by any stretch.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much so.
And it has such an intricate bass line under it, and all that.
Yeah,
and
it's like Trojan. It's like Trojan horse pop. Trojan horse pop music.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
No, it's a lot of fun, this album, and it's very Halloween-y, I think.
Yeah, it is.
In all the ways you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, there's definitely songs you could if you're going to a Halloween party this week, you could definitely pull out Dead Man's Party
or the whole album.
Heard Somebody Cry. No, but like these are the particularly Weird Science. Even probably Fool's Paradise as well. They're all
No One Lives Forever, man.
No One Lives Forever. Yeah,
that is what Halloween is.
That's
Halloween. About.
Yeah, that's great. It's really
just
cool.
Another Day, because you probably saw Stranger Things and it was on that, and that was during Halloween.
Yeah,
yeah.
The one sad thing about this album is that it is not available on Spotify.
No,
nor can you download it on iTunes.
But bits are on Spotify. Bits were remade for the live album, and some of them sound good.
Bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But you can, if you're on Google Play Music, it's right there. So you can get a 30-day free trial. I would highly recommend you do that because it's well worth your time.
If not, just listen to whatever they've got on Spotify, because that's still pretty cool.
Yeah, they've only really got Boingo, which seems to be ubiquitous.
That was the last one they did.
Is that any good? Because it's like
it is
good. Was basically their grunge album or something, right?
It's rock.
Yeah,
they did I'm the Walrus.
Yeah.
They did a cover of that at the end of it. It was pretty cool.
Okay, I'm going back to that.
Yeah, it is cool. Just it doesn't really sound much like Boingo.
Yeah, I think that was the whole idea. They like gave them different haircuts, different clothes, and like wheeled them out and being like, this is Oingo Boingo, the dark rock band. And everyone was like, they're called Oingo Boingo. Like,
they call themselves Boingo.
Just Boingo, yeah.
Then they brought it back a year later. They had their farewell gig.
Yeah, right.
And then, you can watch that on YouTube. That's incredible.
Oh, yeah, I'd say.
Unfortunately, Elfman pretty much got like irreversible hearing damage.
Oh.
He had only played, I think in 2014 he played Dead Man's Party live again once. It may have seemed very quiet. I think it was in Austin, but it looked really awesome.
Cool.
And
so the only last thing to just discuss on this is the name. It's such a terrible name for a band.
Aren't all names.
No,
all names are bad names.
I really wish they weren't called Oingo Boingo.
Foo Fighters sucks.
No, but Foo Fighters is evocative. I just think I feel like I almost probably in my life actively avoided this band because of their name, and I'm so annoyed that I
never
did that.
Never do that again.
No, but
there's so many 80s bands that have awful names that are so good.
Yeah,
that was what you did.
Never judge a boingo by its oingo is the moral of the story.
Never oingo your boingo, man.
Oy, oy, oy. All right. Is that everything?
Beautiful. Yeah, that's all.
Okay, everybody have a very spooky Halloween.
Yeah.
And we'll see you next week.
Yeah, for another scary review. Oh, Weezer. Oh. Let's go to that.
See you then.
Bye.